Hey, Yaz. Yaz, guess what?
What?
I bid you welcome.
I want to play a game.
Stay on the road. Keep clear of the moors.
It can't be bargained with. It can't be reasoned with.
Let them see what kind of a person I am. Why, she wouldn't even harm a fly.
Hey folks, my name is Will.
My name is Yaz.
And welcome to the Monster Monday podcast. This is the weekly podcast where myself and Yaz talk about a horror film every single week. And Yaz, why do we talk about horror films?
Because the monsters in film aren't as scary as the monsters in real life.
And the weekend that we're recording this, they don't have all of the results in yet because it's been spread across 2 days. It's the BAFTAs this weekend, and we just wanted to give a shout out to Promising Young Woman, which is a film we covered a couple of weeks ago. It's got 6 nominations, including Best Film, Best British Film, Best Director, etc., etc. So we're looking forward to seeing the results from all of that. But this week we're going to be talking about another critically acclaimed film from a couple of years ago. This is something that I avoided the initial hype. I didn't see it in cinemas. It wasn't until it went onto DVD and Blu-ray that I wound up seeing it. We're talking about Hereditary, which is the directorial debut of Ari Aster, who's also recently done Midsommar. This is one of A24's biggest hits, if not their actual biggest financial hit. Massive critically acclaimed horror film. So Yaz, tell us, why do you hate Hereditary so much?
That's not true.
Not to stack the deck too
much.
That's
not true. I don't hate it.
Mm-hmm.
It actually grew on me the second time watching it.
Yeah.
Still not over the moon. Maybe the more I watch it, the more I like it.
Yeah.
Except for that ending. I will never like the ending.
Anyway, so yeah, Hereditary, big film in 2018, massive like viral marketing campaign where you've got this young girl making strange like noises like every 10 seconds in the trailer.
That'd drive me insane.
Cutting the head off a pigeon. You've got Toni Collette, Australian treasure, just natural born chameleon, once faked having appendicitis because she wanted to skip school for a bit. But Yaz, before we watched Hereditary for this viewing, for this podcast, had you seen it before? What were your first impressions of it?
I had seen it once before. And I thought the film was awful.
Yeah.
And I really didn't like it the first time I watched it.
So is it safe to say that you went into this rewatch with low expectations, or did you want to give it another chance?
No, I went in with very low expectations.
Yeah, just yelling at the characters.
They raised it a little bit.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I got a bit more mad at the characters this time round, but they raised the bar a little bit. Yeah. Some of it was quite good.
Mm-hmm.
But the first time round, to be honest, I found it really boring.
Yeah.
And didn't engage with the characters at all.
Because I think we watched Midsommar first, didn't we?
No, we watched Hereditary and then gave Midsommar a go.
Okay, yeah.
Hoping that it'd be different, and no, it wasn't.
I think Midsommar was better than Hereditary. I thought it was just a bit more engaging. But yeah, I'm kind of in the same boat as you. My first viewing of it, quite, you know, I had high expectations because I'd heard so many great things about it. Watched it and it just wasn't really that engaging. So let's not waste any more time. Let's dive into Hereditary. This might be a difficult film to do a non-spoiler and spoiler discussion for because it's a little bit like Psycho in that the big twist or thing that hasn't been shown in the promotional material happens quite early on in the film. But it also, I remember shortly after this film came out, the twist did become a big meme. So I know a lot of people probably already know a lot of the stuff that happens in this film already. So I think what we're going to do for this one is just have a generally free-form discussion. If we go into spoilers early on, that's just the nature of the discussion. So you have been warned, we're going to be talking quite spoiler-filled about Hereditary. So the film follows a family in Utah. You've got the Graham family. You've got the dad, Steve, played by Gabriel Byrne. You've got Annie, the mum, played by Toni Collette. You've got teenage son Peter, played by Alex Wolff. And you've got young daughter Charlie, played by Millie Shapiro. Millie Shapiro, this is her feature film debut. She won an award for playing Matilda in the Broadway musical version. She was Matilda.
Oh, nice.
So that's how she got her big claim to fame and how she got noticed for this. So the family have recently attended the funeral of Annie's mother, the kid's grandmother, who was quite a domineering figure in her life. So she's not quite sure how to feel about the grieving process. She's not sure whether or not to be sad or relieved, what the kids should make of it, etc. And after this funeral, some weird things start happening around the house that they live in. Annie is a miniaturist. She's building dioramas and figurines and stuff like that. And I'm sure there's some great symbolism with that, because Hereditary is the dolls that we made along the way, I guess. You've got Alex, who's trying to get with this girl at school, trying to be popular, smoking weed all the time. And things start happening that around Steve, who's trying to keep from his wife. He gets a phone call saying that the grandmother's grave has been desecrated, but he decides to keep that information from Annie. And Charlie is just being a bit of a weird little shit, where she's just going around going all the time.
That incessant clicking would drive me insane.
Yeah, she's
just, she deserves what happens to her just based on that.
just being a general problem nuisance all
the
time.
And the fact that she cuts off a pigeon's head now, yeah. that is disturbing.
Yeah, and it's in the trailers as well that a pigeon hits her classroom window. She goes to it in the bushes while eating a chocolate bar with like a pigeon, like a bird brand on the chocolate bar, chops its head off and makes it as a little toy, because she's a bit weird like that. And she also doesn't quite know how to respond to the grandmother's death. And yeah, I think this film kind of gets off on the wrong foot a bit, because we're meant to be looking at how this loss in the family of the grandmother is going to reverberate throughout the rest of the family, how it's going to influence them, how they're going to cope with the loss. But because the inciting incident of the film is the funeral, the film opens with them like about to set off and drive to the funeral. We don't know what a functioning family looks like with this. So it's just the family starts off pretty miserable and then they just continue to get more miserable.
Yeah, I really don't like the characters in this. I mean, kind of like the dad.
Yeah, the dad's cool, yeah.
And the brother, weirdly.
Mm-hmm.
I don't think the mother's portrayed in a very nice light. I understand she's grieving and everything, but she's really not painted in a good light at all.
I'm sure...
She just forgets. She just becomes really selfish,
yeah,
I feel. And yeah, I just didn't like her.
Yeah, she starts attending, like, grieving group therapy sessions. You know, you sit in a circle, my name's Annie, hi Annie, and things like that, which I think you cringed at. I remember that happening. I think you just don't like those sort of like big social gatherings where everyone's speaking in unison. And
well,
it helps people, but yeah, it's not for everyone.
But my understanding of therapy from the therapy that I've had is it's a one-to-one thing. It's deeply personal.
Mm.
And why would you want to share that grief with... that's just me.
Yeah.
I'm quite private in things like that. Mm. I don't, you know...
Yeah, but the stuff that I think prevented Annie from being endeared to us two was that she kind of forgets that everyone else in the family has their own... They've got their own shit as well. Like, she goes to these group therapy sessions, and when she comes home, she's like, oh, I've just been to the movies. And she's kind of keeping that from everyone for kind of no reason. Like, it's not kind of discerned whether or not she'd be ashamed of going to these things, or if she just doesn't want
to. It's obvious she doesn't like her child as well. The one that's living.
Yeah.
It's very plainly obvious that she does. It's nice that she does a little bit of a 180, mm-hmm. Shall we say?
Yeah.
She does start to become a mother again.
Yeah, she does the bare minimum.
Towards the end.
Yeah.
But, like, she just almost forget. I understand grief is powerful,
mm-hmm.
But when you have family,
yeah,
and loved ones you need to remember they're grieving too. They've lost somebody too. Especially a child.
Yeah, yeah.
And, like, I just felt it... Yeah, she was...
Yeah. Yeah, I don't even think it's a case of, like, the film is fully aware of just how terrible she's being, because we follow her and we're meant to be empathising and sympathising with her. But like I said, one big hurdle for this film for me was that it starts with the funeral. We never see a functioning family. It is just they start hating each other, and as they continue along, they just continue to find new ways to tear this family unit apart from the inside. And it's a bit of a shame, because I thought that the cast were, like, uniformly excellent. I actually think the performances are the strongest part about it.
Yeah, they're all great performers. It's just the characters themselves. I feel sorry for the son and the dad.
Yeah.
She's, like, projecting this extra shit on them that is not their fault.
Yeah.
And she just needs to deal with it. And help herself out, and then that way help everyone out.
Yeah, I think that the cast do a lot to try and give some semblance of personality to the characters, because you get people like Peter, you get the son, and he does feel like a boomer's idea of what a teenager is like nowadays. Oh, they smoke weed in the sports field. Oh, you get a look into his bedroom, and it's like there's hardly anything in the bedroom. Like, this guy basically has no hobbies other than an open laptop where he's stalking this girl he likes at school. And also he's got an English lesson early on at school, and it's the exact same English lesson that Laurie Strode has in the original Halloween. They're learning the same subject. It's a homage to that.
That's cool.
Like, obviously, I think homages and references can only get you so far, but I don't dispute that Hereditary was made by people who love horror.
Yeah.
I really appreciated that. But ironically, I thought that Hereditary, I know we're talking about it on the Monster Monday podcast, so it's a bit sacrilege. I think I would rather remove all of the horror elements entirely and just have it be like a Charlie Kaufman-esque drama looking at this family's descent into grief. That's what I think the film would either be better if it committed to the horror shit or if it committed to the drama shit. And I'd rather it just picked a lane and stuck with it.
My name's Annie.
Hi, Annie.
My mom died a week ago, so I'm just here for trying it. I have a lot of resistance to things like this, but I came to these a couple of years ago. Well, I was forced to come, and I guess it helped. So my mom was old, and she wasn't altogether there at the end, and we were pretty much estranged before that, so it really wasn't a huge blow. But I did love her. And she didn't have an easy life. She had DID, which became extreme at the end, and dementia. And my father died when I was a baby from starvation because he had psychotic depression. And he starved himself, which I'm sure was just as pleasant as it sounds. And then there's my brother. My older brother had schizophrenia. And when he was 16, he hanged himself in my mother's bedroom. And of course, his suicide note blamed her, accusing her of putting people inside him. So.
Yeah, see, the second time I watched this, I actually started to enjoy it a bit more. I mean, I did zone out for some of it. I did get a bit bored in some of it.
Yeah.
But it did start to... I at least got a little bit of a connection.
Yeah.
With the dad and the son this time round.
I had that... I think I had that experience too, where I went into it with pretty high expectations because it was meant to be this genre redefining horror film, and then I watched it and it didn't deliver for me. But when I went into it the second time, kind of knowing where it was going, I could kind of adjust and be like, okay, it's more of a drama with a few horror trappings and a weird horror focused ending that just doesn't sit right with me.
Yeah, I still don't like the ending.
We'll talk about that when we get to it, but yeah.
But the rest of it grew on me, and like the performances, like you say, are amazing in it. And it is genuinely quite anxiety inducing in some of it. It does mess with your senses and your perception of everything.
Mm.
Actually, like I said, the second time round, I actually enjoyed it a bit more.
Mm-hmm.
I think maybe a third viewing, maybe I'll like it even more.
Yeah, maybe.
I'll just skip the ending.
Yeah, it cuts off when he leaps out the window, cut to black. There we go.
But I like that we start to see that the mum is becoming back to herself again. It's clear that there's a lot of unresolved family issues going on. And she's taking her hatred for something out on her children.
Yeah.
One of which, inadvertently, I'm not saying it's her fault, but it's a consequence of actions that leads to one of the children dying.
Yeah.
In a horrific way.
Yeah, so...
So she's probably carrying all that guilt with her, which is probably why she ends up being a bit of a twat to people around her. But, like, you can't just blame your child for the death of your other child.
So for those who might be listening to this who haven't seen the film and are happy with the spoilers, basically Peter wanting to flirt with this girl at school and go to a party with weed and stuff like that says, oh, I'm off to a school barbecue, and the mum says, can you take your sister with you? And she doesn't want
to. Why do you like film families like always try to get the siblings to take their other siblings to parties with them? It never happens in real life. No. I'm pretty sure of it.
Absolutely.
It never happened to me. It was never, take your brother to this family party with you. Or like, I'm pretty sure. Why do they do it in movies? Like, what is that about? Nobody wants to hang out with their sibling.
So that awkward stuff can happen because they go to the party. Charlie is like obviously the odd one out and is a bit uncomfortable. She's kind of been forced to go there by her mum. She's like, you really want to go, don't you? Don't you, kid? And she's like, yeah, okay. So early on in the first scene, they go to a funeral. She's eating a chocolate bar. And the dad's like, that doesn't have nuts in it, does it? And she's like, no. Oh, good, because we don't have your EpiPen.
Oh, that's another thing
that
annoyed me about this family. I was like, if your daughter is deathly allergic to nuts, why are you not taking this fucking EpiPen everywhere with you?
I've never met somebody with an allergy, a severe allergy, who doesn't have, like, a little pouch attached to their belt or a little compartment in their pockets which has an EpiPen in it. You keep that with you.
Well, yeah, because it's going to save your life.
Yeah, and I almost would have understood the structure of the film if early on she had a reaction and, oh, we've got the EpiPen, we can do it. Because maybe one of the parents keeps it with them. But because she's gone to this party and the parents aren't there, something bad happens.
Yeah.
But it's like, no, we've gone to this funeral. We don't have it with us. And we presume because it's a funeral, there's going to be a platter of food or something. We really should have brought this thing. Anyway, bad parenting. So she goes to this party while the brother is smoking weed next door, flirting with this girl. She is having a slice of chocolate cake. And you think, oh no, it's going to be a weed cake or whatever, but no, it's just got nuts in it. And her throat starts swelling up, and he tries to drive her to the hospital. So to be fair, he does try and get her immediate treatment. He leaves the party. But as she's gasping for air out of the car window, there's a dead deer in the road. He swerves the car and her head smashes into the lamppost, which we're laughing because it is also just like a horrific moment and you laugh out of awkwardness. This moment reflects like an actual real life thing that happened in 2004 where these drunk guys were driving home. This guy thought he was going to be sick, so he went out the car.
No.
So that really did happen and it was inspired by that sort of event. But the guy who was driving was so out of it, he drove home with the body still in the car and went to go to sleep and left the body in the car. Whereas in the film, though, Peter...
I'm sorry, I'm not laughing. Well, that's not funny.
It's not funny,
like,
but
oh my God.
I am telling you this story for the first time.
Yeah.
So this is a shocking reaction, listener, I assure you. So Peter goes home with the sister's body in the car and the head on the side of the road still. And he just... I think this is a bit selfish, but, you know, he's young and he feels an immeasurable amount of guilt.
Teenagers are selfish.
But he lets the mum find the body which is, and he's just laying in bed awake hearing the mother's cries off, like, from outside the house. It's all off screen, which is...
Yeah, it's pretty bad.
That is pretty bad, but I kind of understand it. It's just a bit uncomfortable.
What do you
to
do?
Watch.
What do you do in that situation? Hi, Mum. Hi, Dad. half of your daughter's in the back of my car.
Mum,
like...
funny story. Don't check the car. Something like that. But, yeah, so it is quite brutal, and it was also the bit that got memed. Like, this film came out in 2018, and obviously things have been generally terrible for the past few years for a lot of people. So it was like... right, Winnie. What was your 2018 like?
Love to keep that in.
So, yeah, you had a lot of people saying, going into 2018, like, and, like, they're really happy, and then it's just, like... what my 2018 wound up being, and it was a shot of the actress. It became a bit of a meme, which is how, that's basically how I learned about this twist in the film through Twitter. You right? So you get this initial death of at the beginning of the film with the grandmother, and then you get this one on top of it. And it was kind of disturbing just watching Toni Collette's performance during it, because it was so raw and real.
Yeah, it's very... I'm really sorry. Winnie's just drinking water really loudly in the background. It's just making me laugh.
The cats aren't letting us do this safely, are they?
No. Yeah, her performance is real stomach churning, isn't it? Yeah, you can feel the distraught and everything. She just falls to pieces, really, doesn't she?
And she's like, I don't even want to live anymore. She's screaming, like, I want to die. And it's really...
Yeah, it's really gut-wrenching. It's hard, that is.
I think Toni Collette is the best thing about this film. And there's a reason there was a lot of Oscar talk about her performance. And, you know, I wouldn't have been adverse to that looking back. And horror is not really a genre that Toni Collette kind of goes through, because one of her first big roles was in The Sixth Sense. So apart from that, this is like a return to horror.
She did Velvet Buzzsaw.
That was around this time as well, wasn't it? But she said that she kind of goes, she wants to do like comedies, but she just loved the script for Hereditary so much that it compelled her to want to do this role.
Yeah, while the characters have like flaws where I don't really connect with them, I can say, like, yeah, the story is a cool story. I think that's why I was so disappointed, because this is my ideal kind of film. This is the shit I love, isn't
it? Yeah,
like,
yeah.
And to not have it fulfilled, I think, was so disappointing for me. Like, I love weird, culty, spooky shit. And the same with Midsommar, the same thing happened to me there. It just didn't engage me the way I wanted it to.
Yeah.
And this is like my ideal type of film.
Yeah. Because one film we talked about a few months ago was The Void. And that was a film that was built around, like, it was a hospital under siege. There was a sheriff there, and there was a cult that was trying to get in for some nefarious reason. And I think that worked better there than it does here, because, you know, the cult stuff is the focal point of the film, whereas for Hereditary it is kind of treated as a twist, and it just kind of felt like, oh, we don't really have an ending to this film, just throw a cult in.
There's little hints throughout that there's part of a cult, but it's not even, I don't know, I just thought the ending was a bit weird.
Yeah, I don't think it was like, oh, it's a rushed last minute twist.
It didn't really make
sense
to me, in the fact that we didn't have the proper narrative of what this cult is. It wasn't like explained to us what the cult is, why it's so significant, why they need a male host, and all this kind of stuff. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah. Like, it's because it is so last minute that you can't establish any of the details.
Yeah.
And a lot of the stuff, because there are hints throughout it. Early on, when Annie is giving the eulogy at the mother's funeral, she's like, oh, there's so many strangers here today. And some of those actors in the background do appear at the end as cult members. It's not something that was just done at the last minute. The seeds are kind of in there, but only on like repeat viewings. You're not really going to notice the first time. But with the everything revolving around the grandmother and everything that was going on in her life, a lot of that is relayed through a single monologue at one of the group therapy sessions where Annie is talking about the difficulties with her mother and how her brother committed suicide and blamed the mum, saying that she was trying to force like personalities inside of him, which they initially thought was like schizophrenia, but it could be like possession now or some sort of spiritual thing that the mother was trying to force on him. And there's the hint that Charlie says that grandmother always wanted me to be a boy, things like that. So the seeds are in there, but it does feel like, oh, last 10 minutes, we've got to wrap this up, bring the cult members in and have everyone be naked, please. That was the impression I got.
I never wanted to be your mother.
Why?
I was scared. I didn't feel like a mother. But she pressured me.
Then why did you have me?
It wasn't my fault. I tried to stop it.
How?
I tried to have a miscarriage.
How?
However I could. I did everything they told me not to do, but it didn't work. I'm happy it didn't work.
You tried to kill me.
Why did you try to kill me?
If there's one thing that I will give Hereditary 100% credit for, I do love how it's filmed. I love the camera, like the camera moving and how it just sort of gracefully goes from room to room and portrays everything in a really slow and articulate way. The set itself, the house that most of the film is set in, was not like an actual location. They built the whole thing from the ground up on a soundstage because they wanted to be able to move the walls, to move the camera from room to room, and also get the shots where it looks like it could be a dollhouse.
Wow.
Which is what Annie's like creating in the background. She does these little miniatures. And the production designer had to spend hours and hours making these miniature sets. And then when he turned up to set with them one day, the director said, these are too detailed because they're meant to be a work in progress for the character. She's not meant to have finished them yet. So we actually need to dial down the amount of detail in these models, these really intricate little sets.
Typical. Wait till the... finish the project and then say, oh, actually, it needs to be like this instead. Oh, God, the amount of time crew members must have that. It's ridiculous, isn't it?
It's the perfect backhanded compliment. You did too good. You did too good at this project. But yeah, they made thousands of these little dollhouse pieces. And I'm sure it's all symbolic because the family are being influenced by things outside of their control and other forces, just like dolls in a doll's house, etc., etc. But because I didn't really care about the characters themselves, the themes didn't stick with me.
Yeah, that's the problem. I didn't care about them that much. Like when the little girl got killed, I was like, yep, cool. She was annoying.
Yeah, she's the tongue clicky one who decapitates pigeons.
Yeah.
Like, oh, she will be missed.
Yeah, like, I didn't connect to her at all. Like, I was just like, she's very strange. Just staring, zoning out, chopping off birds' heads. Always eating chocolate for some reason.
Yeah, like you sympathise on the baseline level, but beyond that, like you sympathise because this is a horrible thing they're going through. Not because, obviously can't speak for anybody listening to this, but we didn't care about the characters.
Yeah.
And I think if there was like a 10-minute prologue or something to let us know what the family was like before the film started.
Yeah, so maybe that would have helped.
And the film is, like, it's over 2 hours long. Feels like 20 hours. It feels very long.
It does feel very drawn out.
Yeah.
I did get a little bit bored again in the middle. And then when it started to get to the good shit again, I got reinvested.
Mm. Like, there's a few good, like... just chop these scenes out and show them out of context. And there's some really good scenes. Like, there's one really great scene when Annie goes to a group therapy session. She was there when her mother died, and then she comes back a few months later after the daughter's died, which must just be a terrible feeling. But as she's leaving, someone who recognizes her from before flags the car down and talks to her. And they just have... it's like a one-shot conversation out of the window of this car. And it's really nice. It's like you get this really nice, sympathetic like friend. Her name's Joan, played by Anne Dowd, and they open up to each other in like a really honest way and a really supportive and like the really genuine performances. It feels off the cuff. It doesn't feel scripted.
Yeah, it feels like she might actually start being a mother again, like being a person again, instead of just being angry at everything all the time.
Yeah.
Oh, I'm so sorry to chase you down. Were you not coming in, or?
I forgot something.
Oh, okay. Sorry. I recognize you from a few months ago. Oh, God, I feel very silly. I'm Joan.
Hi. Are you doing better?
What? After your mother?
What? No, that's not... My daughter was killed.
Oh. I'm so sorry. Oh, would you like to come in with me? Or we could even just have a coffee?
I'm sorry, really, I really did forget something.
My son died.
Oh. I'm so sorry.
How old was yours?
13.
God, that's awful.
The drama stuff in this film is, for the most part, I think, accomplished really well, like in its own bubble. But with the horror stuff, it does feel like a kitchen sink approach. Like when the film has to start resolving to dreams within dreams to get your jump scares and your freaky set pieces, it does feel like it's reaching at this point.
I don't know, I didn't mind that, to be honest. I thought that stuff was better this time around. And I particularly liked the burning book.
Oh yeah,
and how that affected things.
That was really cool. I think just the practical effects for that was really cool.
Yeah.
Yeah, and how she puts the book on the fireplace and her arm starts setting on fire.
Yeah.
And we've already gone quite into spoilers already, but how Steve meets his fate. The book gets thrown on the fireplace and he just sets alight.
Oh, yeah, it's quite awful, really.
Yeah, but because they had built the whole set and everything, they flame-proofed that whole room specifically for that. So it's just he, in the middle of this wooden room, is on fire. And it's a really...
What I didn't realise was that she was possessed, though, doing it. Because I said to you, well, why hasn't she tried to get the book out and helped him?
She got possessed. The book gets thrown in the fireplace. He sets on fire. She's just, like, shocked at seeing it happen. And then she becomes possessed and just watches it. She only has a few seconds of shock, like, after processing what's happened before some other force possesses her.
Right, okay, because I was like, why has she just stood there? She put herself out. Why isn't she trying to put out her husband?
Exactly. Trying to hit him with the fire poker. Yeah. But yeah, his whole body just sets. Really impressive effect. Like, the whole production of this film and the way it looks and the way it sounds. Like, the composer for this, Colin Stetson, like, he composed, like, 90 minutes of music for this film. And he, like, worked 16-hour days getting it done, making the music itself its own character in the film. And it really comes across. There's a wonderful soundscape to the whole thing. I even like how the film... It takes place during summer, so they do have... You've got this horrific backdrop against these luscious green fields and the summer mountain ranges of Utah and stuff. It's an unconventional setting that I think works in the film's favour. Because you had a few questions for the whole cult stuff that happens at the end of the film. One question I had is that why are they harassing Peter? Like, they obviously...
Yeah,
they want
that's
him,
what I didn't understand.
Yeah, because they want him to be a vessel for whatever this entity is.
I think the vessel's Charlie, isn't it? But Charlie's King something. King...
King... it is right. Paimon.
Yeah, Paimon, whatever that is.
One of the eight kings of hell or something.
Oh,
like
yeah,
that.
They do say, yeah.
Yeah. But because yeah, they want Charlie's spirit to possess Peter's body because they want it needs to be a male host or something like that. But okay, if that's the case, why are they harassing him to the extent that he's actually causing himself real physical harm?
Yeah, it's confusing.
Don't they want like a pristine male body to like, you don't want damaged goods, do you? But the scene, it's in the trailer as well, where he, like, gets possessed in the classroom and smashes his face onto the desk. Like, that's horrific.
That's a great scene.
That's horrific. Yeah. But because I think Alex Wolff is proper metal, he really wanted to actually break his nose for that scene.
Oh, is this the one where they had the pillow and then he hits the wrong bit of the desk?
Yeah, because Ari Aster's like, no, you don't need to break your nose, okay? No. So they had, like, half of the desk was padded. So he slams his face down, the stunt goes wrong, and he dislocates his jaw. But it was a previous injury, so it wasn't like, it was something like a reopened wound, basically. So he does dislocate his jaw accidentally to do that stunt, which is, ouch. Ooh. Yeah.
I mean, that's method acting, that.
it is, but why did they have only half of the desk, like, padded?
Well, because I think he was supposed to hit half of the desk, wasn't he?
Yeah.
So
Just pad the whole thing, mate. The budget only extended to half a desk.
Yeah, maybe.
Sorry, mate, we could only afford half a pillow.
Maybe it's to make it look realistic. Yeah. I don't know.
Maybe.
You are Paimon, one of the 8 kings of hell. We have looked to the northwest and called you in. We've corrected your first female body and give you now this healthy male host. We reject the Trinity and pray devoutly to you, Great Paimon. Give us your knowledge of all secret things. Bring us honor, wealth, and good familiars. Bind all men to our will, as we have bound ourselves for now and ever to yours.
I also thought the scene in the attic was quite good, with just Peter and his mum. And the saw.
Oh, yeah.
And she's, like, sawing her own head off.
Yes, she's got piano wire. And you see, like, arteries getting, like, punctured and blood coming down, and she's floating. And the bit that kind of creeped me out was when she's... It's only a couple of seconds, but he's locked himself in the attic, and there's banging on the what do you call it, the hatch, the door on the floor, and it cuts to the corridor, and Toni Collette's, like, crawling on the ceiling, head butting and banging on the on the door, and it's I imagine it just being really weird out of context, but it was like, holy shit, she's really determined to get in there, but she somehow ends up teleporting inside the attic and decapitates herself with piano wire.
Yeah.
He jumps out the window because there's naked cult members in there. Some weird light possesses him and he follows his mum's floating corpse, which...
into the treehouse.
As someone who's grown up with Gerry Anderson puppetry stuff, I couldn't help but just find that a little bit funny. Like, all his Toni Collette's floating headless corpse going across the garden and ascending into the treehouse. I found it a little bit funny.
Yeah, this is where it loses me a bit.
Yeah.
I mean, the chopping the head off thing is kind of cool.
Mm.
But after that, you're just kind of like, what the fuck?
Yeah, yeah.
None of this makes sense. I don't get why this cult is doing this.
Yeah, they follow... follow the corpse into the treehouse, climbs up, oh, there's naked cult people in there. Okay, I guess this is happening now. Joan is there and says, oh, it's okay, you're Charlie now, because Charlie is still, like, decapitated, decomposing head is on top of a statue now. Oh, you're this hell god now. Credits, please.
Yeah.
And then that's it.
Yeah.
And it's like, obviously...
I've got explanations needed here. Like, why is everyone decapitated? Mm-hmm. What's that got to do with this cult?
Yeah.
What's going on there?
I have several questions, is basically the sentiment. But yeah, it's not even a case of, like...
Also, that treehouse seems fucking massive.
Yeah, like... I think it is bigger on the inside. That's the real demon technology. But it's... Yeah, and I don't think me and you have an issue with ambiguous endings. Like,
no.
It's horror. Like, ambiguous endings or endings that subvert expectations, it's part and parcel of the genre. Like, take a drink whenever the villain comes back at the end and drags somebody down into Camp Crystal Lake or whatever. It's part and parcel of the genre, but I think it's because this whole cult stuff is such a dramatic right turn, and also, in my opinion, so much less interesting than the actual grieving family drama stuff that the film could have been.
Yeah, maybe if they'd explained it more, or like more cult things had happened, instead of just like, oh, we found a few boxes with a few things in, and now there's a photo book, and that's supposed to explain everything to us, but it doesn't. I want to know why it needs a male host. I want to know why, like, this cult's end game is. I want to know what they're trying to worship. Yeah. Like,
I think it's because...
is it just another satanic panic bullshit? Like,
it's because it is... it's no exaggeration. It is the last 2 minutes of the film. It's like, you're the demon god now. Here's the decapitated head. Worship you. Look, credits. It's so much like, what on earth is this? Like, in the last 2 minutes, that there's no time for it to sink in. There's no time for you to actually kind of process that the plot has taken a drastic, like, turn at, like, fourth and bananas. Neither time did the ending work for me. Even when I knew it was coming and could spot the signs earlier on. Like, I appreciate the drama stuff and the grieving, and even if the characters are unlikable, to an extent I can see where it's coming from, and the cast make it work through sheer force of talent. But then it's like, okay, bring in the naked cult bearded people and off with their heads.
I do like that Toni Collette's character we get to see the real her, because obviously at the beginning she's just this bitter, as you would be, but she takes it out on the wrong people.
Mm.
She takes it out on a child, and then we start to see her become a mum again. But then she gets possessed again, so then she starts trying to kill him.
Yeah.
So it's like, oh, this poor kid has got no rest. Like,
exactly.
She tells him that she never wanted him, and that, like...
although that was a dream sequence.
Oh, yeah, that is true. But it's clearly what she's thinking. If she's dreaming that.
Yeah, yeah.
And then she's like, oh, my God, I've just told him this is what's happening.
We don't see it, but we kind of, like, get some, like, stuff in a dream sequence of it, and it's alluded to, where she wakes the kids, because she sleepwalks, which, in my opinion, is just another horror checklist thing of the film that it just wants to tick off, because it really wants to... it really wants to nail all of these horror tropes. So she sleepwalks as well, and she's like covered her kids in paint thinner, and she's holding a match, and the striking of the match wakes her up, and that's why the kids are understandably very frightened of her, because the mother seems to want to kill them, but her subconscious wants to kill them whenever she sleepwalks.
I mean, that is a bit weird. I mean, I don't really know anybody that sleepwalks and they do that kind of thing. Like, There's supposedly a case out there where somebody was sleepwalking and they murdered their spouse.
And didn't they get, like, they got off, didn't they?
I think they did, yeah.
Yeah.
But, I mean, it's very convenient.
Oh, boy.
That's all I'll say about that.
But, yeah, so it's...
Surely sleepwalking, like, when my brother used to sleepwalk, all he did was get up and pee in a bin. Like, yeah. It's not...
Well, basically, his subconscious was like, gotta pee, gotta pee, gotta pee, gotta pee.
And he thought the bin downstairs in the front room was a toilet. I mean, he was a little kid.
Yeah. I thought, what lockdown does to your brother. Yeah, this was ages ago. But, yeah, it's a weird... it takes some weird left turns. One scene that I did like, though, was... well, I say like. It made Annie... incredibly unlikable, is the dinner scene where the dad's cooked this lovely meal and the son prods her and is like, is there something you want to say? And she just explodes and just yells at them from across the table and is like, it was your fault and I know you feel guilty, it was your... And he's like, well, hold on, she didn't even want to go to that party. And I actually liked that because it's like, obviously no one's strictly to blame.
Yeah.
But if you play that game, where does it end?
Yeah,
like
exactly.
Why
was the reason you forced her to go to the party, hey? And she can't handle that, being told that.
Yeah.
I mean, but it's right. If you're going to force this kind of stuff on people, like, you've got to expect people to clap back.
Yeah.
I mean, you can't, just because they're your child doesn't mean to say they should sit and take this abuse from you, and vice versa.
Yeah.
Like, just because somebody's family doesn't mean to say they're allowed to abuse you or say whatever they want to you and not have repercussions from it. Mm.
Unless you're in a cult, that way.
Oh, yeah, of course. Then it's fine.
Yeah, then it's God's plan. Sorry, it's Payman's plan. The eighth king of hell, whatever. It's better than Pazuzu. I bet Payman and Pazuzu, they play, like, poker every weekend.
Just say it. Just fucking say it.
Don't you swear at me, you little shit! Don't you ever raise your voice at me! I am your mother! Do you understand? All I do is worry and slave and defend you, and all I get back is that fucking face on your face! So full of disdain and resentment and always so annoyed! Well, now your sister is dead! And I know you miss her, and I know it was an accident, and I know you're in pain, and I wish I could take that away for you. I wish I could shield you from the knowledge that you did what you did, but your sister is dead! She's gone forever!
There's a few cool practical effects I liked. Like, there's some seance stuff, like a candle just, like, erupts like a blowtorch at one point. That was really cool. There's a chalk and chalkboard, like one of the small ones, and a ghost, like, writes out a message on that. That was really cool. Apparently done with magnets, but it was really difficult to get a tiny magnet inside the piece of chalk, and they had to do it under the table.
Yeah, it was really cool,
really cool effect. There's some great practical stuff here.
Yeah.
The film only, like, it cost $10 million, but it looks way more expensive than that. This is a really, really well-done production. But I really would not want to watch the 3-hour cut, which apparently exists, because, to be honest, the 2-hour cut was already a bit extreme.
Yeah, but if the 3-hour cut explains everything that I want explaining, I might actually enjoy it.
Can you imagine a 3-hour cut of this film, but the last 2 minutes are unchanged?
Oh,
you follow this family for 3 hours, and then it is, like, surprise, 2-minute cult stuff, then the ending. That might have actually been even worse.
No, but I didn't dislike it as much on the second time round. So there's always, like, hope for the future.
Yeah, I'm, for what it's worth, I'm glad that I revisited it, but I'm not compelled to visit it again.
I actually think I prefer it to Midsommar.
Do you think? So I've not revisited Midsommar, so maybe Ari Aster films are ones that need to be watched twice.
Yeah, maybe.
Maybe, but that might be difficult because Ari Aster's next film is Disappointment Boulevard, which is meant to be a 4-hour film starring Joaquin Phoenix, which has not got a release date yet.
Mm-hmm.
So, will I watch a 4-hour film twice? Maybe not. That's all I have to say about that.
I mean, if it's good, yeah.
But maybe. Do you want to...
Would you not be interested? I'd be interested to see what it's like.
A 4-hour film?
Yeah.
I've not even watched Zack Snyder's Justice League yet, and that is a 4-hour film that I probably will end up seeing. I've not watched The Irishman, I want to watch The Irishman.
You've done double bills before, though, so you can't say it's not like you can't sit there and watch them.
Yeah, that's a point. And like, the past 2 weeks, we've watched 5.5 seasons of Line of Duty.
Yeah, exactly. So it's not
it's a different mentality, isn't it? Like,
you're just going into it with negative thoughts,
God,
William.
I'm so biased. Yeah, but I'll watch, like, 5 or 6 hours of a TV show, but when it's like, do I want to watch The Irishman for 3.5 hours? I'll genuinely and ah about it. But
the answer to that is no, though. Yeah,
but I actually do want to watch The Irishman. Anyway, I want to watch a good 4-hour drama, obviously. And I wish that Hereditary was more focused on its drama. See, that has brought it right back around.
I don't know. I do like the horror elements in it. I just wish we had a bit more attachment to the family.
Yeah.
I just needed a bit more grounding, I suppose, and a bit more of the cult stuff.
Yeah, yeah.
A bit more explanation. Maybe like a flashback to childhood where Granny's acting like an absolute weirdo.
Yeah, exactly. Mum, Granny's doing the cult shit again.
Yeah. Yeah, basically.
Yeah.
And see why the mother is so damaged and why she clearly hates her children.
Yeah. Like, because a lot of this stuff is just thrown on the audience through a single, like, monologue a third of the way through the film. It's a lot of important information for the characters to hinge on a single scene, especially so early on. Yeah, it's structured a bit strangely. But, yeah, speaking of traumatising childhoods, though, I will always remember Hereditary as the film that accidentally had its trailer played before Peter Rabbit in a cinema in Australia.
Well, that's pretty funny.
It is very funny.
Oh, your poor kids are being terrified.
But it is one of those it is the trailer where you see the pigeon with its head getting cut off and everything. And it traumatised the kids. They were crying. They fleed the cinema with the parents and everything. And, you know, the projectionist did stop the film. And the cinema offered them complimentary tickets and stuff.
That is pretty funny. To be fair, though, my kid would probably just be like, can we see that, Mommy? Can we see?
Well, Peter Rabbit's garden looks a bit decapitate-y, doesn't it? For me, personally, that will be Hereditary's lasting legacy.
What a great one to have.
Yeah. But like I said, Midsommar, I maybe need to watch Midsommar again. I prefer that to this. But
I've changed my mind. I prefer Hereditary to Midsommar.
Well, the next time we draw up a wheel, we'll add Midsommar to it so we can do the Ari Aster double feature. I like bits of it. I respect the production and the performances.
It's definitely grown on me.
Yeah.
I think if I watch it again, it'd grow me a bit more. I think maybe it's one of those films for me. Maybe one day I'll love it if I've watched it enough.
Mm. You know what? I think I'd really like a 90-minute cut. Like, shave half an hour from this film off. And I do think it might be...
What would you cut out of it?
Basically anything without dialogue. For the most... Because there is just a lot of very... Towards the end... Peter walking to the treehouse takes like 3 minutes, just walking from one side of the garden to it. I'm exaggerating, it feels like a very long time. But yeah, I think there's a lot that, maybe half an hour is a bit excessive, but I think there's definitely some trimming you could do here. But that's just me. I would trim this film like a child with a pigeon in the garden and trimming its head off. There we go. I'll make that work somehow. Anything else to say about Hereditary?
No, I think we've pretty much said it all. The cast are great.
Mm-hmm.
The set and everything, production design is fantastic.
Yeah.
The makeup, the practical effects, it's all beautiful.
Mm-hmm.
It's just the narrative that lacks a bit for me.
Yeah, and even like knowing the ending going into it, it didn't work for me either time watching it.
Yeah, the music was good. Although I got a bit confused by the music towards the end. I was a bit like, really? But that's just personal opinion.
Which bit was that?
In the treehouse. It got all like bubbly, floaty, fairy shit.
Nah, I have to rewatch that. If that's true, I will just put some of that music on top of this segment now. Anyway, folks, thanks so much for listening to us talk about Hereditary. Hopefully we didn't anger too many people, because it has a very devoted audience, I think.
It does,
Big critical acclaim.
I was so confused why people loved it so much. I mean, second viewing, okay, I understand why people love it. I still don't love it. Yeah. But I can see why people do. But at first I was like, you're crazy.
Yeah.
This isn't like the best horror film since whenever. I was like... There's been way better films.
Yeah.
What are you on about?
Yeah, it's not even the best like cult film around that time. I prefer The Void to this, but obviously different films. Well, it's just cult.
I prefer The Love Witch.
Oh,
get that in there.
Take a drink. She mentioned The Love Witch. We'll have to add that to the wheel as well. Speaking of which, I'll spin the wheel and find out what we're going to be talking about next Monday. I've been waiting for this for a while. I've been waiting for the wheel to pick this. Yaz, what are we talking about next Monday?
We are talking about 1931's Frankenstein.
It's alive! It's alive! We've talked about Dracula. Now it's do Frankenstein, the Boris Karloff original. Yeah, looking forward to this one. I've not seen it all the way through. I've obviously seen the iconic scenes from it. You know, I'll never look at children and flowers the same way again.
I was going to say, it's going to be that scene, surely.
Basically, this is just not a good fortnight to be a kid in a horror film, is it?
No. But it makes me feel sad for the monster. Mm. He didn't know what he was doing. He thought he was playing. Anyway, I'll discuss it next week.
This is for next Monday. But if you know what we're talking about with that scene in Frankenstein, you know, let us know on our social medias. Yaz, what are our social medias?
Twitter, we are at Monster Mom Pod. Instagram, we are Monster Monday Pod. And Facebook is the same as Instagram.
Thanks so much for listening to this episode of the Monster Monday podcast. My name is Will.
My name is Yaz.
And we'll see you next week.
Bye. Bye. I was going to say you need to do that at the end.